Welcome to the review in a movie not.
Welcome to the Nadu movie review.
2020.
I'm Ross Oaks.
And I'm Jeremy Wainwright. And what an incredible year it's been.
Something like that, right?
Remember at the beginning of the year when we first recorded, we were like, Nadu movie review 2020, the best year for the podcast ever. Yeah.
Well, okay, I still think it is the best year for the podcast ever. We're getting more
plays good.
Than
Are we?
I think so. I mean, last time I checked, we get about 200 a month.
That's not bad.
Or week? Or month? Or, I mean, those are
a
huge
minute.
Differences. Those are
a minute.
Those are huge differences, but we're doing well.
200 a minute. And 50 of those are Mike Medina.
No, I think it is a month. Yeah, it's a month. 200 a month.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Currently, Ross is performing a seance.
You always do these visual gags.
I know. He's trying. Well, you're trying to revive the career of the man who is our topic today. Now he's licking the candle. This is turning into the weirdest fetish video ever.
We're both bathed in darkness. We're sitting in dark rooms with just the light of our microphones.
This is the spookiest recording we've done, and it's not even Halloween time.
Oh, I hate that. Oh, I hate when people do that. He's doing the thing where he puts his tongue on his upper lip and makes a big pair of lips. It freaks me out.
Let's just fill this entire episode with visual gags. Ross is now wearing a hat.
A cowboy hat.
But no, I'm thinking that Ross is doing a seance to try to bring back the career of Matthew Lillard, the man who we're talking today.
Yeah.
Because I think we can both agree, we're only three movies in, but we can both agree that he deserved a much bigger career.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I want to do something at the end of this episode.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to tell you what it is yet.
Oh, I'm ready.
It's gonna be a peekaboo.
I love saw it. They're scary, though.
So we'll get to that. But before we talk about Matthew Lillard.
Yes. Before we bow down to the Lillard King.
What have you been watching?
Well, let me tell you. Let's see if I've actually been updating my Letterboxd correctly.
You can go TV too, because we just watched the first two Mandalorian episodes. So
I still haven't watched them yet. But I've been watching King of the Hill. I've been slowly binging through it since they added it to Hulu like late 2018. Like, I've seen most of it, like, in bits and pieces, because I used to watch, like, when I'd get home from school, FX would be playing King of the Hill, Bernie Mac Show, and Malcolm in the Middle reruns. So, like, I was raised by Bernie Mac, Hank Hill, and Malcolm in the Middle's dad and mom, basically. Three great sets of parents. But, sure. But King of the Hill, amazing show. And then I think since the last movie I talked about when we had Sean on, I was talking about how I rewatched Halloween. Since then, I've rewatched Prince of Darkness, another John Carpenter film from 1987. One of his lesser known, well, pretty well known by horror fans. It's a great spooky movie. I hope you can't hear my heater because my heater just turned on.
I mean, I can't. I don't know if the microphone can, but.
All right. I rewatched Pumpkinhead, another great spooky movie from the 80s.
Yeah, you love those. You love those weird, scary movies.
I love spooky movies. Everyone loves a good spook. I feel like I've watched other stuff, but like I've been terrible at actually logging things on Letterboxd when I watch them, so then I have to go back and like haphazardly remember what I've watched. But I rewatched Halloween 2, the original sequel. It's okay. It's a fun slasher. I hate that they made Michael Laurie's sister. It's a terrible decision. I rewatched Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 again, the second time I've watched it this year, because it's just incredible. If any of you have never seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2...
That's the one Michael Bay produced.
No, he produced the remake.
Oh.
Which is also very good, but not as good as Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's pretty good. Michael Bay, I am ashamed to say that it's almost been a year and I haven't watched the new Michael Bay movie. I need to get on that.
What is that?
Six Underground.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I need to watch that. But speaking of long-lost auteurs, I finally watched Corpse Bride for the first time.
Ooh, that's a good
one. The last animated, I think it's the last animated Tim Burton movie. And it's great. People told me to like temper my expectations, but like obviously if you compare it to A Nightmare Before Christmas, maybe you might be disappointed, but I thought it was really good.
Well, I mean, he didn't even make that one, so
I know, yeah. Like in terms of stop motion movies that he was involved with. Obviously he directed this one.
Yeah.
But I think obviously I haven't seen Dumbo. I haven't seen Mrs. Peregrine's whatever. But like I think it's the last Tim Burton movie that actually feels like Tim Burton.
Sure.
Like, I think Charlie and the Chocolate Factory came out after, and I kind of like that movie, but, like, I don't know. I know he went on after that to make the war crime that is Alice in Wonderland. But then, on the titular Halloween day, the holiday itself, my annual tradition, I rewatched Trick or Treat, the best Halloween movie ever.
Oh, yeah, I should watch that again.
I rewatched Rob Zombie's Halloween remake, which, I'll be honest, didn't hold up as well this time. Oh. I love Rob Zombie as a director, but like, I don't know.
Wait, that's not the Jamie Lee Curtis one.
No. That's the original.
No, but they just did a new one, right?
Oh yeah, the new one that's a direct sequel to the first movie.
Oh, okay.
But I rewatched Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, which is a masterpiece, because I feel like with the first Halloween he made, he was like kind of forced, like the studio was like, all right, why don't you hit all these beats, you know? Obviously he added his own stuff, like the backstory to Michael Myers, but like with Halloween,
right, because he's in like a psych ward, something like that,
a little bit. You see him as a kid, like, and he had an abusive family. But like Halloween 2, it's kind of like Rob Zombie off the rails. He can like do whatever he wants because there's no like, he's not remaking a specific movie anymore. He's making a sequel. So like I showed it to my girlfriend. She was not impressed, but I really like it. But and then my girlfriend showed me a Scooby-Doo TV movie from 1988 called Scooby-Doo and the Reluctant Werewolf. And it was pretty fun. Oh, it
sounds familiar.
You probably know Shaggy has a red shirt in it. He becomes a werewolf.
It's the one where he becomes a werewolf. Yes.
Yes. Because Dracula wants him to race.
Yes. 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 That one was on TV all the time.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, Scooby-Doo, it's hard, you know. Obviously, Scoob was a massive disappointment. But in terms of, like, those old specials and stuff, it was kind of hard to not have a good time.
That was from 88, you said?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, they've been making Scooby, but I'd still say the best Scooby-Doo movies, the animated ones, were like from Zombie Island. Like that four, there was that four movie stretch. There was Zombie Island, Witch's Ghost, Alien Invaders, and Cyber Chase. And then, well, though, you're gonna hear us talk about one of the live action Scooby-Doo movies soon.
Pretty soon.
But yeah, that's all. I'm pretty sure that's all I've watched. You know, like I said, I'm terrible at logging Letterboxd. Just watching a lot of YouTube videos on top of that.
Yeah, I do that too.
A lot of YouTube. I haven't been playing. I'm trying to think video game wise. I started playing Amnesia, but other than that.
A lot of PS5, Xbox comparison videos.
Oh, Jesus.
A lot of Xbox Series S versus Series S comparison videos.
I don't need some nerd to tell me that the Xbox Series X is the best.
I just like looking at them. I just like looking at these consoles. They're beautiful.
Did you get the iPhone 12?
No, I'm not. Okay. No, this year. I mean, this year has been a little, shaky ground for everybody.
Wow. So what happened?
I don't want to date this podcast, but they can see, you know, they can go back in the history books and see.
Is it because Alex Trebek died?
That's one reason, yeah. Thanks for bringing it up.
I know.
I haven't been as spendy.
No, yeah,
I get that. I haven't want to spend. But we did just buy a new mattress today, which just took a big chunk out.
Give me your old mattress.
If you want. It's pretty good.
You probably wet the bed.
All the time. That's why we're getting a new one. We got a Casper, though.
Oh, sweet. Hopefully it doesn't scare you.
But yeah, so this year, I think I'm just going to ride this phone out. I really do want the Pro, though, because I miss the zoom lens that I used to have.
I desperately want a new phone. Although, this has nothing to do with movies, but this is a tangent I want to go on real quick. I've had the iPhone 10 since 2017. And ever since I finally...
it came out, you got it like the day it came
day
out.
Of, yeah. But ever since I got it, I told you I got it to update the other day. Or no, not the like last month. It's been running better, but it's still a little like it'll just sometimes it'll just randomly go black and then come back on. And I'm like, oh, because mm-hmm. 3 years, even though Apple products are like, you know, they'll run for a long time, 3 years is still a while.
I mean, my grandma's still using that 6S.
Well,
she says it's fine.
Well, older people
hasn't updated it in 3 years, but
I know older people have much more patience. Like if like an app takes like a little longer to load, they'll be like, "Oh, this is fine." Meanwhile, if an app doesn't load for us in like 0.6 seconds, we're like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah,
I'm gonna throw this thing out a goddamn window. But you have to promise me if you upgrade your phone, I have dibs on your 11.
You want it?
Hell yeah!
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
I'll give you a bucket of chickens.
Live chickens. All right, that works for me. Speaking of live chickens, let me tell you what I watched.
I'm ready.
I'm going to go in reverse order because it works with the chickens better.
Did you watch Chicken Run?
No. Damn. I watched the last movie I watched was Borat, subsequent movie film.
I watched that too. I forgot to log it.
What'd you think?
It's okay. So, it's in terms of, I mean, you can't top the first Borat.
That was
lightning in a bottle.
It's pretty much perfection.
Yes, I will say this new one. It's at its best when it's directly like, you know, going after current events. Because the thing about the first Borat that's genius is that it was a satire on America as a culture, but without going after specific things. Right. Whereas this one feels much more topical in a way that like I both appreciate, because I think the best parts are when he's specifically like, you know, like the Rudy Giuliani bit, or like, you know,
and
when
he's with those three guys, or
yeah, it's a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
But like when it, other than that, it does feel like it's trying a little too hard. Like So
I agree. I think it does date itself. The first one's much more evergreen than this one. But I think it's what we needed right now, to be honest.
Yes, it was like, it was refreshing to have Borat in these trying times.
Yeah.
And the girl that plays his daughter is incredible.
Yeah, she was really good.
I hope she goes on to do things, like have a great career, because she's incredible. Like just the fact you just like, he's like, will you buy me a big cage? I want to be in a cage like Melania.
So the day before that, I watched the first Borat.
I rewatched that a couple years ago. It's so good. Have you watched Bruno?
No.
Bruno's pretty good too, because it's basically the same thing, but he's playing like a Russian supermodel.
Mm.
Yeah, the best part of seeing in Bruno is he's at a airport and he's trying to get his luggage from like the luggage belt, and he grabs his bag and there's a little baby. There's an actual baby in it. Oh, and the people are like, "What the fuck?"
Then before that, I watched The Haunting.
The remake?
Yeah, it was in 99.
It's a remake of a 60s movie.
Oh, it was god awful.
I've heard that, because that same year we got a remake of The Haunting and The Haunting, The House on Haunted Hill. I've heard that is The Haunting the one with Liam Neeson?
Yeah, Liam Neeson, Owen Wilson, and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things.
It's so boring. It's like, even with those three actors, boring. I mean, Owen Wilson. So here's the thing about Owen Wilson. We all know him as Lightning McQueen, right?
I Yeah, I guess so. Begrudgingly so.
But Owen, so even though Owen Wilson is this, like, he's not a Will Smith. He's not even a Liam Neeson, to be honest. But when we see Owen Wilson's name, we know we're getting some sort of movie that has some sort of production value to it. You know, it's not like a off-the-shelf DVD rack, you know.
I guess.
And Owen Wilson does bring it. I mean, he commits.
He was big into genre stuff in the 90s. He's also an Anaconda.
And then, yeah, it was just a bad movie. Before that, I watched Addams Family Values and The Addams Family.
Amazing movies.
Addams Family Values, really good.
Yeah, they're just what an incredible cast.
Directed by our buddy
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah. It was his first and third movie.
Who made a little movie known as Nine Lives.
Oh, God.
You know what they should do? They should make a fourth Men in Black and bring back Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, and Barry Sonnenfeld.
He did Men in Black 3.
I want a fourth one.
I mean, three. I mean, we already talked about three last time. Wait, was it last time?
We've talked about three many times.
We have, but I liked it the last time I watched it more than I did before.
Redeem us after International.
Oh, you know, I didn't even... I totally forgot that even existed.
Yeah, you can keep forgetting it exists.
Yeah, I totally forgot about
it. It's terrible.
That's technically four, though, right?
I guess.
Are you calling Men in Black International the Hobbs and Shaw of...
No, Hobbs and Shaw is actually at least fun to watch.
That's it.
That's it, really.
We can get into Matthew Lillard if you want. I've just been playing some games and doing some work. I mean, I watched a couple movies here and there. I don't know what you want from me.
I want you to watch more movies.
It's worse with the lights off.
It's scary. Imagine you just wake up in the middle of the night, you just see that. It's like The Conjuring, just like... Rah, rah, rah. I don't think if there's any big... I feel like there's big news we need to talk about.
Well, what do you think about this Regal business?
Well, didn't The Rock do something recently?
The Rock?
I know he tore the gate off of the front of his house.
You see that? I think that was a while ago, yeah.
That was a while ago. I thought The Rock did something, maybe not. The Rock had coronavirus, but he survived it.
Did he really?
Yeah, he had the COVID.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
That was like a month or two ago.
We should probably call him and make sure he's okay.
Oh yeah, maybe he'll send us a free bottle of tequila.
I got mine. You didn't get one?
It must have got lost in the mail.
Yeah.
I know the USPS has been busy lately.
Yeah, Regal,
listen. So they opened back up near us like 2 weeks ago, was it? 3 weeks ago. And I kind of took, like, I planned on going to, like, catch, like, Tenet. Like, you know, I'll catch, like, an empty Tuesday showing, my usual thing. But I kept putting it off, being like, I'll get there when I get there. And sure enough, they're closed again. World is on fire. But want to know what's not on fire?
What?
Matthew Lillard.
His career?
His career.
How dare you say that?
I wish it was on fire. Like, I grew up loving Matthew Lillard, like, and I always knew he was a good actor, but, like, the deeper we get into this, the more I hate Hollywood for not, like,
that Oscar status.
Maybe they did, and maybe he just was kind of like one of those guys that was like, I'm not into being, like, you know, a big Hollywood actor. Like, I kind of want to just do my own thing.
Right. But he deserves it, though. I want to see him on that stage accepting an award.
So we just need to cast him as, like, you know, like JFK or something. I don't know. What did the guy who shot JFK look like? Could he play him? John Wilkes Booth?
No, not John Wilkes Booth.
We need a John Wilkes Booth biopic.
That's the guy who shot Lincoln.
Oh, yeah. Who shot JFK? I know that's a question that opens up a lot of
there's a grassy knoll. Hold on, let me find it.
When Colin and I were playing Phasmophobia,
Lee Harvey Oswald.
But Colin and I were playing Phasmophobia. Probably you've definitely heard of Phasmophobia, right?
Yeah.
And
I watched him play it. I watched him. Colin streams on Twitch, twitch.tv/Zony the Paradox.
Yes, Colin, the world-renowned video game expert, past and future guest, my roommate, your brother. But we were playing it, and I kept asking.
I love that you specify that.
Awesome. I kept asking the ghost why they killed JFK.
That's only on, what is that
PC?
On? Just on PC?
Yeah, right now. I can only assume it's going to grow, because it's, that and Among Us are like the two biggest games right now.
So you played it on your Mac?
No, he played it on his PC, and I just sat there with him.
Oh, I see.
But we both like yelled stuff into his microphone, like, you know, fuck you, ghost. Why'd you kill JFK?
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, it was kind of rude of that ghost to shoot JFK.
Yeah, definitely.
But you want to know who didn't shoot JFK?
Who?
Matthew Lillard.
Not yet.
In a movie, yes. Matthew Lillard for the Lee Harvey Oswald biopic.
He's probably a little old now, I don't think.
Yeah, Marvel movies, they made...
That's true.
Made Michael Douglas look like a spring chicken in the last Ant-Man.
Now, just to give an update on where Matthew Lillard's at.
I know he's been posting a lot on Twitter about political stuff.
So I'm on his Instagram right now.
I don't even know.
So this was one day ago, which was Veterans Day. He says, God bless the men and women who choose to serve this nation. I will never overlook your sacrifice and will continue to use my voice to remind the world that we are blessed to have you as our front line of defense. And it's like a picture of him with
veterans. Members.
Yeah.
What a stand-up guy, you know? What a stand-up guy. You know what? Every actor that we've covered so far is a stand-up person.
I mean, I think if we were to rank them...
In terms of being good people?
Yeah, it would probably go... I love Vin Diesel, but I don't know if he's going to be at the top of the list.
He's a good person, though. He seems so sweet.
He is, but I mean, Number one.
I think Charlize might be number one because of the sheer amount of charity work she does.
Well, I think I put her at number two because The Rock is way better at social media marketing.
That's true.
Gets his message out there. Charlize, I mean, she has the charity, but I wish she would, you know, promote it a little
more. I know.
And then you know, maybe Matthew Lillard because he's, like, out there with his...
He's a really nice guy, it seems like.
Well, that's not what our resident horror expert, Justin Trombley, has to say.
That is true.
Which I still haven't gotten the story from him yet.
Well, tell him to be on the 13 Ghosts episode.
And then, I guess I would put Vin at the bottom, just because he seems like a nice guy who doesn't have the social
angle. What about Will Smith?
Oh, Will Smith. I forgot. Will Smith, I would put him... Above Vin Diesel, below Charlize.
All right, I'm glad.
Wait, switch them. I would go The Rock, Charlize, Will Smith, Matthew Lillard, then Vin Diesel.
I'm glad we took the time to do this.
Yeah, and I don't condone ranking people by by any means.
You gotta rank the two co-hosts of this podcast.
Oh, okay, you and then me.
All right, well, I rank me and then you as well. All right.
All right, so that's what Matthew Lillard's been up to. But what was he up to in 1999?
Well, he's coming off, like, freaking Scream. He's coming off, I think, probably some other big movies I can't think of. But
I think it might just be Scream.
Scream, yeah. But no. See, so this movie, SLC Punk, I avoided this movie for so long because I thought this movie was about, like, dumb skateboard culture. And I thought it was going to be a movie about
Like the Z-Town boys or whatever.
Yeah, it was going to be a bunch of fucking people fucking doing ollies and shit and being like, bro, like, listen to this.
How did you get skateboards from the
I don't know, but I avoided this movie like the plague. Like, I'm sure there's good movies about skateboarders out there.
Oh, but the one I talked about, the Lords of Dogtown or whatever.
Yeah, like, I thought it was gonna be one of those, and he's gonna be like, yeah,
wait till the Tony Hawk movie comes out when we're 50.
Matthew Lillard could play Tony Hawk. But,
he could definitely, yeah,
just de-age him, you know, give him metal bones. But so I avoided this movie like the plague, but you know what, after watching it, I wish I hadn't avoided this movie. This movie is great.
So yeah, in between Scream and this, he did a couple episodes of Nash Bridges,
my favorite show.
The Devil's Child TV movie. He was in Scream 2, as Sean talked about.
Oh yes,
uncredited. Dead Man's Curve.
Same.
Senseless, Telling You, Without Limits, and then SLC Punk in 98, not 99. Sorry. Ooh. Then he did She's All That in 99,
which we're covering. She's All That, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, we are, right after this one.
And our guest is going to be former First Lady Barbara Bush.
Oh, but, wow.
I think she died, actually. But actually, our guest is going to be Lee Harvey Oswald. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
SLC Punk. Yeah, it's a movie. What are your thoughts? What do you got?
I think I loved it. I think it's like...
I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah?
I watched this movie... Uh-huh. A mere what time is it? A mere 3 hours ago.
Uh-huh.
Fresh in my brain.
Yeah.
I know everything that happens. Watched it front to back.
Side to side.
Side to side. I think I love it too.
It's so good.
It has no business being this good.
It doesn't, because I think it's like an indie director who, like, I don't think he really made anything of note before or after. And like,
he made in 2016, he made SLC Punk 2,
which I watched the trailer for. And that looks like fucking trash.
Oh,
like, it looks so bad.
Directed by James Marandino.
This movie, like, it feels like it, which I'm sure other movies before and after it did it, but it's like that perfect, like, blend of, like, it almost feels like a pseudo documentary, even though it's fictional people, but it's also telling, like, a narrative.
So the whole time when I was watching this, I took my Zodiac notes, as you call them. Let me pull them up here.
Okay,
the whole time when I was watching this, the only thing I could think of was, this is the anti Ferris Bueller.
Kinda is, even though they're... You froze it for me a second. But no, it kind of is, because they're both anti-establishment figures, but they both go about it in different ways.
I don't know. I don't think Ferris Bueller is anti-establishment. I just think he's anti-school. I just think he's lazy. I just think he's a lazy kid. But.
Well, I think
Steve-O is actually anti-establishment.
And he actually believes in something, whereas Ferris Bueller just believes in not going
taking
to school.
Taking a day off of school. Exactly. Exactly.
Whereas Steve-O...
I mean, right from the gate, the first one of the first sentences in this movie is,
Fuck America. Which, yeah. I took a screenshot of that caption, because I was just like, hell yeah. This movie is very anarch, because it's about punk culture, and like the whole idea of like anarchy. And it was actually kind of interesting, because I've heard people who like try to like explain how they think anarchy is like a legitimate form of like society. And in my brain, I'm like, I appreciate the thought, but like, is there an actual, like, how do you actually believe it could exist? But this movie actually gets into the philosophical argument of like...
It does, and I really like that.
Yeah, and like how like... It also like gets into like the idea of like, you know, like... just how life, like, you know, I don't know, like I think the whole anarchy thing is like kind of also a metaphor of like, you know, we would all love to just be like, hey, like, I don't really have a purpose in life, I'm gonna do whatever I want. But then you realize, much like anarchy is a form of like government or society, you know, life's eventually gonna catch up with you, and like, eventually at some point, which I guess in a way, this movie, I feel like this movie is very melancholy in the way it ends, because like, yeah, he does like stop himself from becoming homeless or like, you know, accidentally dying of like, you know, an accidental drug overdose or whatever, but like, it does feel, still kind of feel like he gave up in a way.
Well, I think I'm going to use the Ferris Bueller comparison a lot, but at the end of Ferris Bueller, you know, he goes
to school.
He finishes the day off or whatever, but Twisted he knows shout. He exactly, but he knows that he's like going to go to high school, going to go to college. That movie was all about how they're going to do all this stuff and him and Cameron are separating, and that like, you know, like high school friends do, you know,
they kind of like Super Bad.
Yes, yeah, very much. This movie was more about and that's why I don't think Ferris Bueller is anti-establishment, because he's just taking a day off from establishment.
Like he fully accepts that he's going to go back to school and go to college.
Exactly. But in this movie, it's almost like Steve-O realizes at the end that he has to basically do what his dad says. You know, he didn't sell out, he bought in, because he realized it was necessary in order to keep going.
Yeah, which I love the relationship with his dad in this. Like, at first it seems like his dad and his mom are just gonna be this antagonistic force that are gonna be like, oh, you're dumb for,
like, yeah, they really weren't cliche.
No, not at all. Like, when his dad picks him up and like in the car, just their conversation is so good. He's just like, oh, you should go to, like, I forged your signature, you're going into Harvard, and he's like, oh, fuck you, Dad. Like, you're
right. Now I'm a little confused on like where in their lives they are. I tried to follow like what kind of hair they had, because he had a blue mohawk when he was in high school, and
which is glorious.
That was the scene
where he has the flashback where he's telling his parents that he's not going to college.
And I love this scene. They were all three of them were on their A-game in that scene.
Especially Matthew Lillard, he's like, I'm 18 now, so I can say, fuck you.
But even before that, when he was just sitting in the chair, like his hand, his like subtle hand
motion. Oh, yeah, when he's like listening.
So good, yeah. The only thing that I didn't like about that scene was that his bald cap was really bad.
Yeah, that mohawk was glorious, but it's also like it's so visibly fake.
But then after that, so they went to college, and he did
like really good.
He did like pre-law stuff.
Yeah. And what did he say? He said the reason they went to college was that they wanted to fuck up the system as much as they could.
Yeah.
But they both ended up graduating with good grades.
But then they went back home and they still hang out with high school kids. Is that what I'm?
Well, they just hang out with like the punk crowd, which I guess is like, because it seems like it's like an amalgamation of like younger kids, older people, like random, you know, dudes off the street.
Yeah.
They literally just like coast through life, it seems like. Like they don't, like they're like, they wake up and they're just like, what are we gonna do today?
Right, yeah.
Which I was also curious, because when I first saw their apartment, I assumed it was just an empty warehouse they lived in. But then I'm like, this seems a little too nice to just be like an empty warehouse. I'm wondering, like, where do they get the money for that? But then I figure, I feel like his dad probably gives him money still.
Probably, yeah.
Which is kind of like, which I feel like kind of fits into the themes of the movie, is like he wants so badly to be like this like anarchist, like fuck the system, but like at the end of the day he realizes he couldn't survive without the system.
Right. And then on top of that, it's almost like I think the character of Steve-O is kind of a combo of all the side characters. And I think that part of him is the Mark character.
Mark is the crazy Swedish guy, right?
the guy whose his parents died in the plane crash.
Yes, that guy
so
is
he
great.
Inherited all their money. And then so like when Mark after that whole scene where he like pulls a gun on them and shoots the couch and everything, and he's mm-hmm. like, "Oh, I'll just buy you a new one." And then there's a scene towards the end where they're at the party and he meets that girl, and then heroin Bob
punches
breaks
the mirror.
And then to the girl as they're leaving, he's like, "Oh, I'll buy you a new one."
Oh yeah.
So I feel like
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, so definitely I feel like he I feel like that's part of his personality that he tries to refuse to accept.
Because he wants so badly to be an individualist, but then like you said, like he absorbs so much of what's around him. Like even his what he thinks is his own like, you know, like specific identity is still just an amalgamation of everything that he like, you know, deals with on a day-to-day basis. Also, did you recognize the guy that played Mark from anything?
Oh, I did, but I couldn't.
He plays the guy in Inglourious Basterds, the one guy that they break out of prison. The really big, tough, like, Danish Jew.
Wait, isn't that Arnold Schwarzenegger's cousin or something?
No, but he has Till Schweiger or Schweiger or
oh,
something.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
He's in Inglourious Basterds. He's the guy that, like, in the shootout in the basement, he's the guy that, like, stabs the person, like, 40 times.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I definitely recognize his face.
But can we talk about my favorite recognizable face and maybe my second favorite character after Steve-O in this movie? I can't remember his name, but Jason Segel in this movie is amazing.
His character's name was Mike.
Mike is amazing. I love Mike so much.
Well, it's so weird. I couldn't like pin him down as a because he goes from 0 to 100 in a split second.
Well, like the first time you see his character, you're like, oh, it's just this like, you know, this nerd hanging out with the punks. But then you slowly realize he is a punk. I just love at the concert. He's just like, all right, I'll be right back, and he just starts beating the shit out of the guy on stage.
Right.
And then after the concert, he's like, sorry, I punched you in the face so many times, but he started punching my friend. He's like, well, I'm the fucking bodyguard. He's like, I know, man.
Yeah, just that part was like very punk to me.
Oh yeah, you should. We should go to a punk concert.
I'm okay. I'm good.
You don't want to crowd surf up on stage?
No, because it seems like chaos.
I've crowd surfed up on stage and dove back into the crowd before. It's fun, but it's also kind of scary.
Yeah, you're more punk than I am.
I'm too old for it now. You don't want to go into a mosh pit?
People older than you that try to still do it.
You don't want to mosh a little bit?
No, I think those days are behind me.
You're younger than me.
So another part was the heroin Bob when he broke his hand and he was in quarantine.
Oh, that part's amazing.
It oddly relates to like right now where he was like going crazy. He was in there
God,
for 3 weeks.
Oh God, yeah. He's like just writing satanic symbols on the wall.
But this was back in the 80s when like, you know, he didn't have the connecting devices that we do now.
No, yeah, he's literally just locked in a room. I love it. He's like, they named a disease after me.
Yeah. But that was I wrote in my notes, Bob is all of us right now.
Bob is great. The thing, I just love the explanation. It's like we call him Heroin Bob not because he does heroin. It's because he hates needles.
Yeah.
And I knew from the minute that at the last party scene when he was like, oh man, I don't feel so good, I was like, this isn't going to end well. And as soon as that girl gave him the pills, I was like, oh no.
I thought he was just going to go throw up.
I don't know. I had a bad feeling that Heroin Bob was going to die.
But before we get to Heroin Bob, Heroin Bob's death.
Yeah.
So, you know, spoiler alert.
Spoiler, heroin Bob dies. Lee Harvey Oswald shot him.
One of the funniest scenes in the movie is when they steal that car for fun, and then they try to sink it.
Oh yeah, and it's like he's like,
it's the salt lake. It's the most saltiest lake. It makes everything buoyant.
And you just start shooting it, and they're like, "All right."
Yeah. But I think a lot of stuff that they talked about, like the part where, I think this part might only apply to Utah, maybe. But the part where they have to go to Wyoming to get the...
I love that scene.
The beer and everything. And it's like the old guy and the old woman who run the store.
They're like, is he British?
We're from the UK. But the small town of it all, I think, still applies today.
Oh, God,
Or at least it did when we went to school. Like, in school, like, there's all these, you know, there's different cliques, and then... Like, there's the town people who are, like, so set in their ways.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, if you were to walk into, like, any of the towns we grew up in with, like, a blue mohawk, they'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and I have to assume it's better now just because probably a lot of those people, I mean, that was, like, you know, 15 years ago for us. So those people are probably, like, either really old not there anymore. So I feel like the parents that, like, are now, who grew up in the 80s, who are now parents that live in these towns, are probably making it a little bit better for kids. But I have to, even with the internet too, I have to assume it's better than what we had.
Hopefully. I want to believe that each generation becomes more accepting.
I can't speak for anywhere in the South, because according to the news, it's not different.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Especially Florida. Fucking Florida.
Now, the stuff with Sean is really sad.
It's very sad. Very, very sad. It starts out as like a joke. I think the movie is smart, and because it starts out as a funny story, like, oh, acid seeped into his leg. And then, like, the more you realize the consequences of it, or, like, right, it's all cemented home when they see him on the street. Yeah. It's just like, oof.
And I think they summed it up really well when he was like, he's like, I walked away, not because I wanted to, but because I had this, like, sick feeling in my stomach. And I feel like that's honestly how everyone feels in those situations, because I just think the situation of someone, like, being that destitute is like really hard for someone to handle. Like, we don't know what to do or how to help them.
Even people like I don't know, like, neither of us are, like, you know, rich or anything, but even for people who are, like, already kind of, like, you know, middle to lower class, like, seeing someone that, like, it's just impossible for anyone of any stature in life just to picture, like, not having anything.
Right. And I think, as helpless as they are, I also feel helpless, because if I give them money, how far is it going to go? What are they going to use it for?
Yeah, which it sucks, like, to have to think that way. Like, to have to be like, oh, they're going to blow it. But it's like, am I going to do that?
I don't want to give them money just so they can spiral again. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine if they're going to use it to benefit themselves. But it's...
Yeah. Like, and then you think, like, do I, like, call someone? Is there someone who can help them? But it's like, but then, you know, like, could I end up getting them in trouble because, you know, they're, like, trespassing or something? Like,
right.
That's why, like, I think it's like, it's easy to sympathize with Steve-O, where he's like, you know, I just had to get out of there. Like, especially if it's someone you know. Like, luckily I've never known someone who got dropped that far.
Yeah.
But also, especially because Steve-O realizes that, like, you know, he's not that far from that. Like, obviously, I think Steve-O had more common sense than to, like, you know, you know, fry his brain, even though that happened to Sean on accident, but like, I don't know, he just like, you know, but I mean, Heroin Bob's death, to spoil that again, Heroin Bob dies, is like another just example of like, even though both of them, I feel like, they feel like they're living their lives pretty safely, which is ironic to like saying how they live their lives, but you know, for being, because like, they're anarchists, but like, their whole point of their lives is they just kind of like do what they want, but like, well, it really, but then, it really cements home for him that like we've been talking about, without the structure of the system, like, you know, it's so much easier to lose everything.
But then right after that scene where they see Sean on the street, they immediately go into this intense like acid trip.
Very like atmospheric, like surreal,
very what's that movie that everyone talks about?
Shrek.
Wait, people do talk about Shrek a lot. Well, and Shrek, I want to talk better about Shrek on this show one day.
Well, it can be Ross's choice.
The one with the one where they do all the drugs in it. What is it?
Oh, Shrek 2.
I want to talk about Shrek 2 as well. You know which one I'm talking about.
They do all the drugs. What are you talking about?
The famous movie where they do the drugs and the...
Oh, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
No. It's,
Shrek the Third?
God damn it.
The movie where they do all the drugs. I don't know. Is it recent?
90s. Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, God, yeah.
They go into this Requiem for a Dream sequence, kind of.
God, that movie is fucking miserable.
And that's how I felt during the sequence. I wrote down, if I will never do acid if it's anywhere remotely like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely... Well, I think it, like, exemplifies that, like, a lot of people say the reason they do, like, psychedelics is because it helps you... It obviously amplifies whatever feelings you have in the moment. It's like, it, like, people... I know people... I've never done psychedelics, but they say that, like, if you really need to reflect on yourself to go on, like, an acid trip or whatever, because it'll like, whatever emotions you're having, it'll amplify them, and, like, it can help you, like, decide if you're going down the right path currently. Because, obviously, if you're, like, sad and you do, like, mushrooms or whatever... Like, you're going to have, like, a really sad, like, introspective trip. But, like, obviously, if, like, you're actually really happy and you do it, you'll be like, oh, life's not so bad. But clearly, Steve-O was feeling a little introspective and sad.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
A little bit. We should do an episode. We should do the Shrek 2 episode while on mushrooms.
Now, going back to what you said about him being... kind of like aware, like he's aware of like he doesn't fry himself too much.
No, like they
you know,
it seems like they're for like, as edgy as their lifestyle is, they still play it kind of safe,
right? And that's why the whole movie is all about, like, you know, you got your punks, your rednecks, your these other guys,
mods, these
other groups of people, and then you got your posers. And yeah, I actually think the end of the movie where they're in Steve-O's basement, mm-hmm, and Bob puts on that record.
Oh, when they're kids.
Yeah, he puts on that punk record. And they both look like nothing punk.
No.
Like, yet. But I actually think that, like, since they both, I think Steve-O more so, keeps that, like, kind of his wherewithal through the whole thing and everything. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he kind of takes care of himself more than everyone else in the movie. I think he's more of a poser than anyone else.
Well, isn't one of the final lines of the movie like, I'm just a fucking poser?
Right, yeah.
Like, I think he kind of like realizes that. I think I think he realizes that, like, he, like, the, like, almost everyone around him was actually way more into this lifestyle than he was. Like, you know, like, he kind of realizes that as much as he, like, I think legitimately cared about the idea of, like, anarchy and being a punk, like, at the end of the day, but no, I think maybe at the end of the day he realizes that being a poser is probably the only thing that's going to keep him alive. Like, you know, like, I think he realizes that, like, the anarchist, like, punk lifestyle isn't something that's designed to do for your entire life, and if you do, you're probably going to be fucked up.
Yeah, and I think you could, you can analyze that line both ways too, because that's the same monologue where he's talking about going to Harvard and getting a job. So I think you could also say that he's being a corporate poser, you know, just to kind of to get in.
And then maybe, like, the whole, the basic, like, theme of the movie is that we're all posers in one way or the other.
Sure, yeah, for sure. Because,
like, if you have a job you don't like and you do it every day and, like, you pretend that you like it, like, kind of, are you a poser? Like, if you're, like, a construction worker and you just, like, ah, it's a job, like, are you a construction worker poser? You know?
I mean, we're getting, I mean, we haven't gotten this deep since probably our 2001 episode.
A Space Odyssey.
But is the theme of this movie, does society force everyone to be a poser?
I think it might be. I think society, which also might reinforce, I think this movie doesn't necessarily say that the ideals that, because one of my favorite scenes is when he has that discussion with that guy in the basement at the party about, like, why anarchy, like, they discuss, like, anarchy versus whatever, I forget what his form of government is, but, like, I don't think this movie necessarily says, like, hey, one way of thinking is the correct way of thinking. I think this movie says that, like, throughout your life, you're going to, like, have different worldviews, and that it's important to, like, not necessarily, like, reject certain world, obviously, if they're, like, harmful to other human beings. Like, if you're like, I'm a racist, like, that's not a well, worldview you should entertain.
I love that for some reason Nazis are a group in this. And
oh, well, they're very big in, like, the punk scene, and, like, normal punks fucking hate them.
But, right, because they beat him up, yeah.
But it's just important to be, like, you know, like, this movie, like, I think it just, it exemplifies that it's important to, like, keep yourself open to different worldviews and, like, not necessarily, like, force yourself to stick with one your entire life if it would be to the detriment of your own sanity and like, you know, well-being, which I think Steve-O realizes, as much as it sucks to give up. Because I don't think this movie is necessarily saying you have to give up on your dreams to, you know, to succeed, but it's basically saying, like, sometimes in order to survive, you have to be more, you have to accept that, you know, life isn't going to necessarily go the way you think. I think, weirdly, this is going to be very weird, weirdly a kid's movie that has kind of the same message is Monsters University.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, actually, Monsters University is much more, like, you know, about, like, you know, a specific job or career, but that movie, you know, Mike Wazowski, this, I feel ridiculous making this conversation, like, he has, like, a specific, his specific thing is, and like, I want, yeah, they want to be scarers. They want to be scary monsters. Steve-O wants to be an anarchist punk. All they can see in their lives is this one thing. This is how I'm going to be the rest of my life, nothing else. But at the end of the day, they have to accept that, you know, it's almost like kind of opposite what they have to accept, because obviously
maybe you got to start in the mailroom.
Yeah, or maybe like they both have to accept that the paths that they want to live the rest of their lives on aren't going to be the healthiest ones for them in the long run. Like, Mike Wazowski has to accept that he's not going to be a spooky, scary monster. Yeah, but he can still be happy. And Steve-O has to accept he's not going to be this, like, you know, edgy anarchist punk forever. But that doesn't mean that he failed by trying to be that or by being that, because he met all those great people. Those people shaped who he is. Like, Heroin Bob, I think, made him a better person. Like, Mike made him a better person. Even fucking Mark made him a better person.
And he says throughout the movie a couple times, it comes up where, in order to, like you said, when they went to college, in order to you know, in order to shake up the system, you have to do it from the inside.
Yeah. So I don't think this movie is ultimately, like I said earlier, it's kind of melancholy, but I think it's melancholy also in an inspiring way. Because I don't think Steve-O, I don't think he's going to be unhappy, because I think if this movie, if the character of, like, what I imagine the character of Steve-O to do after this movie is that he finds a way to keep like, evolving his worldview. Like, I don't think the character of Steve-O is literally just going to give up and become a... Like, he says, like, I think you just said it, like, you know, like, I can shake up, like, the legal system. I can piss people off that way. Like, he's going to keep finding ways to express himself, even within, you know, a framework. Which I think is the ultimate... Maybe another ultimate message of this movie is that, like, you know, even if you're stuck going down a path that you didn't necessarily want to go down, it doesn't mean you can't still make it your own somehow.
You know? Right, yeah.
Like, if you get stuck being, like, you know, like a 9-to-5 office worker, you know, you can figure out a way. You know, you can, you know, shit in the urinal or something. I don't know.
Now, let's talk about Heroin Bob and his death.
It's very tragic.
It is, but...
Because it comes in...
Is it good?
It's great, because it comes at, like, such an important part of... Because I think at that point in the movie, he's, like, starting to, like, you know, think, like, is this, you know, should I just give up on this? Like, it's after, like, seeing Sean shook him up, got him all shooken up, and, like,
yeah.
he just met this great girl, and he's, like, you know...
Had you to know, talk with his dad.
Yeah, like, life's good, but, like, maybe things need to change, and then I feel like... Heroin Bob's death is like a wrecking ball that's like, you know, it's time to make now, that decision.
The girl doesn't come back again, right?
Well, I thought he said that he ends up marrying her.
Oh, yeah, maybe I missed it.
Like, he said before he even met her, he's like, I should have known that night I would meet the woman I'd fall in love with. Like, see her, because we don't really, we just see him, the only thing we see of him after the funeral is just like, he just goes outside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And says goodbye to Harold Bob's girlfriend.
Yeah.
But, no, that's...
So, I mean, it's like, it's crazy because they don't make it a big thing. It's, like, so subtle that kind of, like, makes it really grounded.
What I think is, it fits it perfectly with, like, you know, the themes of this movie is just, like... You know, life just, like, literally life just happens. Like, you know, you can think that you've, like, plotted out a certain path for yourself.
A life finds a way.
In a way. I am a sexy scientist.
but then also, I guess it was just good from a writing standpoint. I didn't really see any kind of, like, philosophical thing about it, but just the irony that he was like, oh, it's ironic that he died from an overdose when he
never did drugs, any drugs ever. Yeah. Yeah. That's just, I hope they fucking chat. I hope someone yelled at that fucking girl that just gave him the pills.
But he believed in this, like, anarchist way of life that he's like, oh, yeah, I'll just take whatever, you know.
Yeah. It ended up biting him in the ass.
Now, the scene where he finds him in the morning. Again, Matthew Lillard
is so fucking good.
Takes it from already, he's doing amazing in this movie. He takes it from like 80 and then just goes straight to like 110.
God, just his one line where he's like, I wasn't ready for this.
Yeah. And he's like asking him to wake up. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, but I think that line, like, where he's like, I wasn't ready for this, is like, it just more, because, like, obviously it's right after he's been having all this introspection, but, like, I feel like he's basically saying, like, he wasn't ready for anything big to happen in his life at all.
Right.
Yeah, whether it be a death, whether it be, like, just anything to shake up his life, because he just kind of gotten used to this, you know, this punk lifestyle where he just did what he wanted. This is the first big thing where it's like, you know, well, guess what? Like, some things you don't get to be ready for, they just happen.
Right, yeah.
But Although I will say I was kind of sad that, like, at his funeral we didn't get to see a bunch of characters come back. I know it's kind of a cliche thing, but it would have been, I thought it would have been kind of nice if, like, Mike was there and Mark was there, and, you know.
Well, I guess that kind of speaks to how, like, fleeting the characters were, you know?
Yeah, the fact that they might have just, like, heard about it and been like, oh, yeah, shit, that guy, he was a good guy.
Right, or they just haven't heard about it at all yet, you know?
That's true. Yeah, I guess not every death scene gets to be like Big Fish. Have you seen Big Fish?
A long time ago.
It's a great movie. That's a great death scene. But yeah, so should we talk about our boy?
Oh yeah.
He's fucking incredible in this movie.
He is, yeah.
He's so, this might be this might be almost tied with Scream. Like, he is so good in this movie.
Yeah, he's really good.
Like, how did he not become, like, one of our biggest actors?
Well, I mean, so the budget... Well, there's no budget information for this movie. But it made... It only made $300,000 globally.
It's definitely the definition of, like, an indie cult. You know? Kids probably saw it, like, you know, young punk, like, edgy, like, you
right,
know...
Right, yeah.
Alternative kids were like...
It's definitely an underrated, underground type of movie.
Yeah, like we talked about, the director didn't really go on to do much, you know. Like, he made a sequel, which again, like, it looked like fucking trash.
But I feel like in the right hands, I mean, I think this movie was in the right hands, but I think in more, I guess, like, Hollywood powerful hands, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
someone who could actually get this movie out to a giant studio or whatever. I think it would have done really well with the anti kind of, again, the anti Ferris Bueller of it all. Him breaking the fourth wall the whole time. Like,
yeah, it's definitely the kind of a movie that could have been like lightning in a bottle in terms of like success.
Yeah, definitely.
But just didn't catch at the right time. But he's so good in this movie. Like, he's funny, he's sweet, he's like heartbreaking. He's kind of like, sometimes he's even good at playing unlikable. Like, there's sometimes where he's kind of like, you know, you're kind of being a preachy dickhead right now. But he's good at all of it.
I do think the movie is a little over stylized in certain parts.
There's definitely some flourishes.
It could be to its detriment, I think.
Yeah. Like, the fourth wall breaking stuff sometimes.
No, that's fine. I just mean, like, the green screen effects, the...
Oh, yeah.
The choppy editing doesn't work all the time.
The freeze frames.
Yeah, lots of freeze frames. This guy loves a good freeze frame.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the freeze frame when the rednecks show up and they just start fighting. Oh, he's just like, I don't know what it is. We just like to fight.
Yeah.
Which I've never been in a fight before. It seems painful.
Yeah, me either.
I could tell you, if I took one punch, I'd be down. I'd be like, enough. Just, what a good movie. I was expecting this movie to be one of those ones where it's like on the list where we would watch it and I'd be like, yeah, I guess, you know, this movie is important for it, because I thought it was going to be about fucking lame skateboarders, you know.
So let's be honest. Any other questions for me?
Skateboard culture is lame. Would you ever dye your hair blue?
No.
Coward. Do you want to go live in Salt Lake City?
Definitely not.
Seems like a great place. I could ask you the questions. Like,
that's what
was
I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Was Matthew Lillard good in this movie?
I mean, 100%.
Hell yeah.
I totally agree there.
Was this movie good for Matthew Lillard?
I'm going to say no. I mean, no one saw it.
I'd say in the long run, yes, in terms of building his, like, his career, like, in terms of people being like, hey, remember, like, how good he was in this? But, like, immediately, no, because, like, it was... Because even if it was, like, a cult hit, like... I feel like movies like Scream and stuff definitely did more for his career than this did.
Yeah.
And then, so were you, did you bow down to the Lillard King?
I did. I mean, it was a fantastic.
I was kissing his knees. So next
episode, we're talking about She's All That.
But okay, so we need to talk about what our magic has done yet again.
Oh, here we go.
So actually, it was kind of a funny series of events. So in the movie Discord I'm in for Blank Check, they were talking about Bloodshot. They were just casually talking about it, and I was like, man, I'm sad we'll never get a sequel. And then I was like, you know, something funny is, like, usually when my podcast covers a movie, they greenlight a sequel to it. Within a minute, someone in the Discord shares an article with me. Well, guess what they just announced?
Oh, my God.
Bloodshot 2 is in the works.
That's great.
We fucking did it, boys. And I don't think we'll get an SLC Punk 3 or SLC Punk. They could make an SLC Punk prequel, I guess.
Matthew Lillard's not in the second one, right?
No, and I saw his Twitter, and he's like, yeah, I'm not involved. I didn't feel like it was right, you know. But he's like, best wish. They brought back. Well, the really dumb thing is the catch to the sequel, from what I saw, is that Heroin Bob had a son. And it's about him, but also Heroin Bob is in the movie played by the same actor, and it's his ghost, like, narrating it.
Oh, my God.
And, like, what I saw from the trailer, like, he was, like, he had, like the dumb ghost makeup, like, his face was all pale, and he's like, yeah, I'm fucking dead, so what? And it's like, yeah.
So, but it's, I mean...
It's the same director, but it's, like...
And he wrote it. He wrote both of them, too.
Yeah.
So it is what he wants, but I guess it's not where Matthew Lillard saw the character going.
No. But at least we got this great movie.
Which, to me, that makes Matthew Lillard seem like a better actor because he cares about his characters.
Yeah, he knows when to not do a movie.
Yeah.
Like, he knows that Shaggy Rogers is a character he needs to play until he dies.
For his bank account.
I mean, yeah.
That one's not really deep to make choices.
I can't wait for the Scooby-Doo episode, which we might have a guest for.
Oh, great. I love that.
Yeah. I'm still working on it, but yeah. Yeah. So this has been Slick-a-Punk.
Well, it's almost 10:30.
Yeah.
I have to get up tomorrow.
So do I.
This has been the Non-New Movie Review.
2020, the best year on the planet.
You can find us at twitter.com/non-new-movie.
You can support us on Patreon. You can send us Instagram DMs and tell us how much you like the podcast. You can send me Twitter DMs about Chappie and Ready Player One. If you have any news or information on who killed JFK, you can send that to Ross's personal email. And yeah.
Patreon.com/not-new-movie.
MySpace.com/not-new-movie.
Friendster.com/not-new-movie.
That's all we got. We'll see you next time and find out if she really is all that. I just keep thinking of the All That theme song. All that. This is all that. And the podcast.